Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Fun podcast coming up. We're going to break down the NFL. A lot of intriguing games. Obviously, the big storyline, and maybe in non-betting circles, is the huge point spread between the Chiefs and the Jets. Got looking at 19 and a half right now, 18 and a half. So we'll talk with Mr. Executive Director John Murray, see how this one kind of unfolds and maybe where it closes. We'll also talk about the Cowboys being the only remaining winless team against the spread, and the Monday Nighter as a double digit. We also have the high profile matchup with the Ravens and Steelers, and the Steelers are undefeated, the lone undefeated team remaining in the NFL. They're catching 4 points in Baltimore. So we'll break all that down. Do baby bankroll bonanzas. We did well on that again last weekend. And don't forget yesterday's pod, UFC with Matthew and Lou, and also college football with Brad Edwards. And before we get into today's episode, I want to remind everyone that if you play fantasy football, I have a podcast you won't want to miss. Make sure you're staying up to date on all of your fantasy football news with ESPN fantasy experts Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, Mike Clay, and Daniel Dopp on ESPN's Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. You'll get daily strategy, previews, and injury reports to ensure you have all the information you'll need for your fantasy football team. Be sure to download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football and Behind the Bets on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Kicking is usually for losers, but the Arizona Cardinals escaped as we welcome in Mr. Executive Director John Murray. Murray, Sunday night, quite the sequence of plays for your boy, the name is escaping me, for the Arizona Cardinals head coach, Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah, well, you and I were texting on Sunday night. What an incredibly boneheaded decision to not make Seattle use their timeouts. How do you not run the ball? You could run the ball on second down. At the very least, you make Seattle take a timeout before you kick on third down. If you're worried about a bad snap and you want to be able to kick it on fourth down, why are you kicking on second down from 41 yards? That's insane.
I mean, even run the four wide draw to Murray like they did to get into field goal position so much on that drive. You're just gaining five more yards. It was a 41-yarder, not exactly a chip shot, especially when pressure's on the line. But, you know, these coaches continue to get paid so much money despite – questionable decisions, to say the least.
They just tense up, and it's like they can't wait to send their kicking unit on the field, their punting unit on the field. But I just would have, you would expect more from Cliff Kingsbury. He's got this reputation as a hotshot offensive mind. What is he doing sending his kicker onto the field on second down like that? I know it's easy to say that after the kid missed, but you know, we were talking about it in real time.
Right. Well,
it's unbelievable, man.
I think he's known as an offensive genius with like play design and stuff like that, not necessarily clock management. But
right, that's true.
They'll learn. I was heavy on Seattle, and that ended up being my best bet on the show Sunday. It just kind of clicked. It just felt right. A lot of trends favored it. And look, they were up 10. It's just so funny how we're kind of like writing off Seattle now because of a bonehead move on a field goal attempt at unsportsmanlike conduct. Because otherwise, it's a 7-point game. Yeah. And I doubt Arizona's able to tie the game at that point. So I think that's a fair point.
And it's funny, you're right, because we were sweating that game hard. Because as you can imagine, if you looked at the results from Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, as you can probably guess, we were way behind for the day. And we had a lot of liability rolling into Seattle at night. Arizona winning that game outright, I don't want to say it saved our day because we still lost money, but it absolutely prevented us from having a disastrous Sunday and If Seattle had won and covered, it would have been our worst Sunday of the year. And because Arizona won that game, we got back a lot of what we had lost, and we were able to avoid losing a lot more parlays that were live to the Seahawks in that late game.
Well, I was annoyed because I thought it was actually a trendy dog, Arizona. So I'm surprised you guys were that liable on the Seahawks. But I just think it's funny how the narrative now is Seattle doesn't have a defense, can't win. It's like, well, actually, they should still be undefeated. So, and they'll get Adams back. And you're right, their defense is not that good, but they've been just fine without it. But we'll see. We'll see moving forward. Quick college update for anything sharp or anything like that before we get into the NFL slate.
You know what's funny is there's very limited action this week from our more respected groups, and it's getting relatively late in the week here. You and I are talking on Thursday morning here in Las Vegas. It's not that early in the week where it's somewhat unusual. We did see a very respected group take 5 and 5.5 with Southern Alabama. That game is tonight. They're at Georgia Southern. South Alabama, excuse me. That game is tonight. But as far as Saturday is concerned, there's a few totals that have moved around a little bit. Guy I respect played over in the Northwestern Iowa game. He went over 45.5, but there's really not a whole lot. I mean, it's shaping up to be one of our most heavily bet games of the year in the evening. Ohio State at Penn State. Penn State's already setting up to be one of our biggest needs of the year in college football. I think if you want to bet the Nittany Lions, you might want to wait on that, because that number probably will go up. Right now we're at 11.5 on Ohio State. But as far as wise guy action, there's nothing on that game yet. And there's really not a whole lot for Saturday in general.
You know, I kind of like that Northwestern play because I think the offense is good. I think Iowa fumbled. I mean, I can see that going over, even though I like Northwestern's defense. That's a solid play. I'm going to think about that one. Okay, let's get into the NFL. We start with a barn burner tonight. We might have a lightning delay, and Carolina numbers come down a little bit. You guys are at 1.5 here, huh? A little Atlanta money.
Has anybody ever used the term barn burner without dripping sarcasm? Like, can you even say barn burner in a non-sarcastic way? No. Yeah, no, there has been some money. Excuse me. There's been money on Carolina, and the numbers moved the other way. So most of our tickets, most of our money, about 3-1 in both cases, are on the Panthers. But we have seen the number come down a little bit from Atlanta. They were catching 2.5 points, 2. Right now they're only getting 1.5. Atlanta could be a teaser option if you want to go up through the 3 and through the 7 on the road against Carolina tonight. It's going to be a tough watch. I got a feeling it's going to be a tough watch. But I am a fan of Matt Rhule. That might be the only thing that captures my interest tonight.
I mean, teasing the Falcons would also entail teasing the Falcons and, like, needing the Falcons. And, like, that's not something I want to get behind after last week's debacle. I mean, just
– right.
I mean, we know what happened with Gurley and all that, but it's beyond that. It's the coaching to let him go down the field and all that. It's just crazy. And here we have Bridgewater, 31-10 in his career ATS, just an absolute cover machine. Matt Rhule, to your point, sure, has been solid. I don't know, man. I think for me, it's Carolina or pass.
Yeah, there has been some movement on the total here. This total was as low as 49. Right now, we're at 51.5. So for the Thursday night game, a little bit of action there. But as far as the side is concerned, I don't see much reason to get involved, at least at this time.
Do you so are you? You're not quite ready to call this like reverse line movement since you have more money on Carolina.
Not quite that much. I don't want to go that far. Plus, you're talking about moving from 2.5 to 1.5, which is kind of a dead move there. I wouldn't sound the alarm or signal into the sky for you just quite yet.
Okay. Well, let me know if there's a bat signal coming up. I will be rooting for a lot
just
of.
Just look out the window, man. Look out the window of that beautiful studio they built for you, and you'll see it.
Yeah, put it on the Caesars marquee for me.
Sure.
All right, let's go to Sunday. This Detroit team is, I'm not going to say they're in the mix, but they have signs of life here. 3-3, if I'm not mistaken, and won 3 of their last 4 games. So after back-to-back road wins, they come back home with the Colts, and Colts are only laying 3 here. I think this line smells fishy. I think Detroit's probably the right side.
Yeah, and honestly, we actually opened it a little cheaper. We opened Indianapolis, 2.5. So it's up to 3 even right now. it is a little fishy. Detroit may be better than their record indicates. You know, they've blown some games at the end. It's hard to trust Phillip Rivers in any situation, but Indianapolis is very solid defensively. I think we all agree on that, and they are off their bye week. So good two-way action in this game. A lot of money coming in both ways. No leans for me here, but it looks like this could be one of the better games at 10 a.m. on Sunday.
Detroit's 8-15 as a home dog since 2015. So remember, it is the Lions after all this. It is still the Detroit Lions. So, yeah, no real interest there. Now, I have a question about this Green Bay, because last week there was an enormous ticket count with the Packers against the Texans. You guys were just sitting there gobbling up all the money, and it wasn't close. It was 14-0 before I could blink, and I did not understand the line that why I didn't move up 3.5, and I just we're just sharps taking Houston. What do you make of all
that? Yeah, you know what? We had a player we really respect on Sunday morning. I got in pretty early Sunday morning, saw a bet come in from that player, Houston +3 even money. So even when the number got all the way down there, we had respected people taking the Texans. It was a very lopsided take account. It was one of our biggest losers of the week for sure, if not the biggest. But the sharper players, the people that we respect, kept taking Houston and kept preventing us from moving the number up. I mean, that's the real answer.
You know, this is kind of when, you know, I used to make fun, and now I just kind of like shake my head and like in amazement. It's just like some of the, like, they're just determined to fade the Packers, right? Like, you get a lot of sharp money every week fading the Packers.
And I'll be the first one to tell you, I didn't really like the Packers coming into this season, but you've got to be able to pivot and realize when you're wrong. Obviously, I was wrong about Green Bay. They are a very good team. Bad game against the Buccaneers a couple weekends ago. Obviously, they got steamrolled in that game. That was largely because of some turnovers. I think a defensive touchdown and another touchdown that was set up by a turnover, but Green Bay is clearly one of the best teams in the NFC. And I can tell you the public is all over them again this week, man. I mean, it was this week's ticket count against the Vikings is just as one-sided as the ticket count we saw last week.
Now, let me also concede I was pro-Minnesota coming in the season, so I pivoted early. I pivoted early with those defensive injuries, and I realized Cousins wasn't going to be much better. So I just don't want to – I think there's a danger. Now, look, you have to bet dogs in the NFL for the most part, but there's a danger about getting too cute. And I think sometimes sharp money gets too cute on some of this. Like, I could definitely see backing Minnesota, especially when it was 7 against the Packers, than the Texans at 3.5. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah. No, I see what you're saying. You're saying you'd go against them if you got the number you wanted. And right now you don't want to take the Vikings unless you're getting 7.
Well, I just thought it was a better bet at 7.5 or even 6.5 than it was the Texans. I mean, Texans are terrible, and they've showed that. Now, the Vikings haven't, but they've showed a pulse. They're getting a Cook back this week, and you're getting twice as many points at the time of this yesterday when it was 7 versus 3.5 last week. So, and then it's a
second. You might like this, Doug. We've got a 14-1 ticket count on Green Bay right now, and we've actually seen our number come down from 7.5 to 6.5 even, in spite of a 14-1 ticket count on Green Bay. Now, those Minnesota +7.5 bets, those were very early on. These bets were made on Sunday when we first opened up this game, Sunday evening. But that you could call that reverse line movement. I think you'd be accurate there, because everyone is betting Green Bay, obviously, right? And this number has come down, and it's come down through a significant number, the number of 7. It's come down from 7.5. Most of the market right now is at 6.5 or a juiced 7, a +7 -120. It has come down a little bit despite everybody playing the favorite.
It's funny. We talked about earlier in the year, I have all these open teasers from the Bucks-Chargers game. I don't know if I can pull the trigger on Green Bay. There's something – I mean, look. My boss told me this a couple of years ago. We were handicapping. It was like teams were 5-0 out of the gate. And it's just like, look, this is not college football. Teams don't go 16-0. Like, there will be slip ups. And I said that on air this year. It just so happened to be the Sunday where the Chiefs lost to the Raiders. I was like, just be careful out there. Like, these teams don't play the best every week. And it's not a video game. There's some ebb and flow to this. And that's why we always talk about situational spots, things like that. At some point, Green Bay is not going to just light it up every week, right? Like, at some point, and we saw that against Tampa
Maybe this is the game where Minnesota plays really well and maybe beats them. Who knows? I don't know. I'm not automatically pulling the trigger on a teaser is my point. Beware.
Dalvin Cook listed as probable for the Vikings. I know you and I usually downplay the importance of running backs, and I still feel that way, but currently Dalvin Cook is listed as probable, and Aaron Jones, the Green Bay running back, is listed as questionable.
As a guy who had Alex Mattison on his fantasy team when last time he just laid the biggest egg ever. So the Dalvin Cook news is significant. Here's an interesting line, and it's come down now. It's three. Oh, no, it hasn't. Sorry. So 3.5 with New England and Buffalo. Now, I say it's interesting because it's the most Belichick has gotten in a divisional game in terms of plus points since 2003, I want to say. It's remarkable, right? But we know about Belichick, blah, blah, blah. But if you look at this team, they're just not good. And are we enhancing the value internally? I mean, if this were any other team, we'd be hammering Buffalo.
Well, we talked about this before the season. We knew that if New England struggled, it would be made out to be all about Tom Brady. But the reality is New England had a lot of people opt out this season due to the pandemic. I think New England might have been hurt as much as any team in the league. I know they lost Dante Hightower, Patrick Chung, Marcus Cannon, Brandon Bolden. They lost a bunch of key guys. And then obviously they lost Tom Brady too. Cam Newton with the COVID scare, he's out for a couple of weeks. This is not a New England team. This team is nowhere near the team that we saw a couple of years ago in the Super Bowl. This team is depleted pretty much at every level. It's still weird, though, to see New England getting 3.5 points at Buffalo. For as long as I've been in the industry, every time New England's played Buffalo, we've been basically just begging for the Bills to cover or stay in the game at least. It's strange to see that. And the public is betting Buffalo. We've got a 4-1 ticket count on Buffalo.
That's what I was going to ask you. Has the public changed their tune finally?
They do. Well, they see that minus next to the team, and they just can't help themselves. It's usually, that's usually how it goes, and we're seeing that in this game.
So it's usually how it goes, but we've seen some public dogs, right? No?
Oh, we have, but that's why I like to highlight them because they're so rare. I mean, talked about it last week on our show. The only pick I played was the Rams. I didn't really have an opinion on the game. I just saw everybody betting the Bears, and I said, well, that's probably not a good sign for the Bears.
I texted you.
I had no opinion on that game.
I'm like,
I had no opinion on that game, man.
Yeah. I had to give a pick on that game, and I was like, you know, I'm back and forth. I'm going to text Murray. I'm like, why was it the one game you singled out for baby bankroll bonanza? And you're like, oh, I have no opinion. I just know that we had 4-1 ticket count on Thursday, so might as well just take it.
If I got nothing else at all, but I see the public 4-1 on the dog, I say, what the hell? I'll take the favorite. I mean, and it doesn't. Nothing works every time. We've stressed that for years on this show, but that's about as good as anything else in the NFL. Fading the overreactions from what you saw last week is probably the best thing you can do. And then another thing that seems to consistently work is fading the public when they all decide they're going to line up on a dog. It just seems to work in the NFL.
I will say this. Cam Newton, I throw out the Denver game. They had no practice as a team. It was just a wonky situation. The San Fran game has me a little worried. I'm just not ready to punt on New England because of that performance in Kansas City with Brian Hoyer. I mean, they almost won. So Belichick is still a mastermind out there, and we'll see what happens this week. And I'm just gun shy fading the Patriots and Belichick. I mean, they have failed to cover three straight. I don't think he's ever not covered four straight. So,
and let's remember this too. One more thought on the Patriots. Like, the 49ers are starting to play to the number that we thought, like the team that we thought they were going to be before the season started. Like, you can look at this spread this week. They're only getting 3 points at Seattle. The 49ers are starting to play to that team that we thought they were going to be coming into the year off of a Super Bowl appearance. They look like they're one of the best teams in the league right now.
I hope so. I'm sitting there with a -325 on them to make the playoffs. They're making some noise. The division's not helping. Yeah. Every team's a
very tough division. Yeah, very, very tough division. That'll be the hard part for you there.
Tennessee at Cincinnati. Titans finally lose a game. They could have easily won. The comeback fell just short with the field goal miss. Cincy, Joe Burrow, Mr. Backdoor Cover, gets there again thanks to a missed extra point. This is kind of like that wonky, like, how good is Tennessee kind of comment after. I think they're pretty good. I like them.
But since he's not bad, or not terrible, I should say.
Well, Cincinnati may be better than we thought. I think Burrow has exceeded my expectations personally. I liked Burrow, but I didn't think he was going to be this good this quick. So, yeah, I would have to agree with you on that. I'd say that they are a little better than we thought, but that's not stopping the public from firing away on them this week, or firing away against them this week, right. Excuse me. We've already got a huge ticket count on the Titans. The Titans look like they're going to be one of our biggest liabilities of the week in the NFL.
Really, we were on top of this a year ago, and I kind of dropped the ball this year. The Titans have gone, since Ryan Tannehill took over for Marcus Mariota in the middle of last season, they've gone over 14 of 16 regular season games.
Wow.
14-2. So, yeah. I mean, look, you got A.J. Brown back. The defense is not amazing. Ben shredded it. And we keep thinking it's like a grind, pound, you know, smash mouth football with Derrick Henry. They kind of throw to set up the run. It's kind of like a weird situation that Henry gets so much rushing, so many yards after halftime. Now the total is 53.5, so we'll see. But it's a gravy train I'm disappointed I got off of, because I was riding it last year and it was certainly favorable. But as far as the Titans and the Bengals, just remember, like, this Titans team escaped some games earlier this year. They're 1-4 ATS as a favorite. They're a good team. I like them. I think they're definitely a contender. I think people writing them off is unfair, but they're also not necessarily like smashing the number as a favorite. So 1-4, like I said, so just be careful laying that 5 with Tennessee. I'm not even sure I would do it in a teaser here, but we'll see. We'll see.
A lot of good teams in the AFC too. You know, I think maybe sometimes people forget when they talk about the Titans as a Super Bowl contender, you'd have to leapfrog Baltimore, Kansas City, and Pittsburgh in that conference right now. There's three very good teams in the AFC.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Vegas at Cleveland. Vegas got shredded. You know, it was interesting. I was listening to some local radio and sharp guys, and they were talking about how they were going to bet the Bucs last Sunday. And this was, I think, last Friday. And I was like, you know, that's pretty good rationale. Just at some point, Vegas has a ceiling, and it's not a playoff seat bar anymore, at least this year with this schedule. No OBJ for Cleveland. Not sure how much that factors in. Browns have showed some life, but ultimately this is kind of a game I want to stay away from.
I kind of feel like this is the game where the Raiders will just show up and win. You know, they fell apart there at the end of the Buccaneer game last weekend. Everything really fell apart for the Raiders after they kicked that field goal. They were down 7. They kicked a field goal. They cut it to 4. And then the wheels just came off from there. But I could see Las Vegas going in there and getting a road win here. I'm not quite ready to back them. And you can probably guess we'll need the Browns. Raiders money line plus a quarter is a very popular betting option here. Got about almost a 20-1 ticket count on the money line on that game. The public in this city is getting behind the Raiders. We will need Cleveland, but it just feels like the kind of game where the Raiders will show up and get a win.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because hockey's a little different, because I knew there was a lot of residents who didn't quite have a team yet. And I knew a lot of like New Yorkers who were out here, Ranger fans, and they were okay. But it's tough with the NFL. Like, you have your team, it's tough to like buy in. So I was curious if you're seeing the support at the window, like you saw with the Golden Knights the first year.
Oh, we are. And despite the fact that the Raiders, although they have a solid team, they certainly haven't been anywhere near as successful as what the Golden Knights were their first year when they went to a Stanley Cup final. The Raiders, they've got a built-in fan base of people that already lived here in Las Vegas. They also have fans that just come here from California, Southern California and Northern California, to root for the Raiders. So we're packed here. With Raiders bets, Raiders bets on the mobile accounts, Raiders bets on the over the counter. We even had a Raiders party here at the Westgate last Sunday that we had to turn people away from because of social distancing protocols. The Raiders have a huge following in this city, and it's definitely showing up at the window.
Interesting. Good. I like hearing that. I'm a Raiders fan, so it's good to hear that. But you're right. This does have the makings of a win. I'm not sure Baker Mayfield's healthy. He got pretty nicked up at that one. I think it was the Colts game in the second half. And he's been pretty limited since then, although he did have some great throws last week. So maybe he's recovered from that. think it was like bruised ribs.
Great throw to win that game, man. That was a hell of a throw to win that game against Cincinnati. And that was not where we wanted that game to land, believe me. I think that game landed three.
You wanted
we had a lot of a lot of sharp guys took the points with Cincinnati, and then a lot of parlays had the Browns money line in it. So okay. That was we were not exactly thrilled with that outcome. That was one of our tough losses in the morning on Sunday.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
I don't think you mean that. You know, I felt like that was there was no emotion in that. That felt. I don't believe you, but it's okay.
I'm a man of the people, Murray. I am a man of the people.
I know. I get that. Hey, you know what? In the NFL, it just kind of rolls off your back. You know, you have these weekends in the NFL where you just get beat up. It's not something that we really get too high and low about, honestly.
The next game is fascinating, and I'm so intrigued. It's the Jets at the Chiefs. We're looking at 19.5. What kind of handle have you already gotten on this? Anything?
You know, it's not going to be one of the more heavily bet games because of like what you and I have always talked about, how the public doesn't really like getting involved with these huge numbers in the NFL. It's always been that way as long as I've been doing this. They don't want to lay 21 points, 20 points. They want to lay Green Bay -3 at Houston. That's what they want to do.
Right.
I don't expect it to be a really high handle game. I'm sure the Chiefs will be in every survivor pool around the country, and Chiefs money line will be thrown into money line parlays, which I would advise against, but what do I know? I don't really see a point to doing that, but I don't expect it to be a really high handle game. The number has come down a little bit from 21, 20.5 down to 19.5. Generally speaking, these bigger dogs, these huge 20-point NFL dogs seem to cover more often than not, at least in recent years. Probably because the favorite just wants to get the hell out of there. You know, like if you're Kansas City, all you want to do is not get anybody hurt and get the win and get the hell out of there. So I don't know if they were motivated to do it. Yeah, they could win by 30 points, but why would they care?
Well, first of all, I just want to clarify for the listeners and correct me if I'm wrong. The reason you don't advise it, the Chiefs money line in a parlay, is like it's just not going to move the payout that much. Now, I don't think they're going to lose.
No, that's exactly right. You're probably going to win. Obviously, you're almost definitely going to win, but it only moves the needle a little bit in terms of the dollars that it gives you. And I've seen those kinds of things lose so many times. I've seen in college football a huge favorite on the money line get thrown into some parlay, barely bump up the payout, and then lose the game and cost the better the parlay. I don't think that that's something you should be doing.
Okay, so. I think it's a fascinating topic because, well, anytime like there's a storyline on like SportsCenter that's betting, it's fascinating, right? Like it's one thing that we try to create storylines in the betting world. Like, hey, so-and-so is like Ryan Tannehill's gone over 14 of the last 16. You know, this is an actual thing because it's the defending Super Bowl champs. It's a team that's winless this year. It looks like it's going to be probably on a fast track to get the number one overall pick. There's even Trevor Lawrence stuff this week. And you have this ridiculous spread, and it's ridiculous by NFL standards. So the question is, are they going to be motivated? No, but like they're not going to just run the power eye three times in the line of scrimmage and punt, especially if they're up 17 in the second half. Even if a backup quarterback's in, Andy Reid's not going to go 3-and-out every time. Now, the Chiefs' defense will not play as hard as maybe Buffalo did last week when they were trailing, and the Jets only got 4 total yards in the second half. Now, Darnold's obviously a huge upgrade over Flacco, so I'm going to throw out the Flacco games. You have that Thursday night game where the Jets really should have won. If they go for it on 4th and short instead of kicking the field goal with, I believe, 4 minutes left, or Ballage in the flat turns it upfield on 2nd down, I believe, and gets the 1st down, keeps the clock running, they probably kick a game-winning field goal. So I think the Jets basically should have won that. Now they're hosting short week Denver on a 3rd-string quarterback. So I think Gase factor in the locker room. You have Le'Veon Bell will probably play as a quote-unquote backup in garbage time, maybe wanting to stick it to the Jets. I'm fascinated to see how this plays out. Let me ask you this, Murray. What number would you need to back the Chiefs? Like, what number would you need the spread to be? And then if you wanted to back the Jets, what number would you need for the Jets?
I think when they first asked me about that, I think it was Mitch Moss asked me what I would make this line like 4 weeks ago, and I said 21. So
that's not what
it's kind
I
of right where
That's not what I asked.
No, I know. No, no, but no, I'm building to my answer. So okay. It's kind of right where I would have had it. So I don't know. I mean, to bet on Adam Gase, I need a bump, man. I need 24 and a half. I mean, you want me to take my taxed income on and bet it on Adam Gase after seeing what the stock market did yesterday? I need at least 24 and a half to make that decision. Kansas City, I mean, I guess I'd probably lay 16 and a half or 16, but this isn't something I'd really want to get involved in too much.
That's exactly what I said, or almost exactly. I said I'd need about 25, and I said 17. I'd lay 17. If this got to 17, I'd lay it. So
betting on Adam Gase, man, that's a bridge too far for me.
25. Although
I did bet on Adam Gase 4 days ago against the Bills, so maybe maybe it's not that hard.
Well, I bet him on Thursday night against the Broncos, so. Yeah. I got what I deserved. I guess you won, but nice. Well done.
Don't be so hard on yourself. No, we won because Buffalo kicked six field goals. We won because the Bills kicked six field goals. The Jets got up 10-0, and then they essentially stopped participating in the game. And they somehow held on and lost by 8. I don't know how that happened.
If the Bills made all their field goals, they would have covered. So the closing number. All right, let's keep it moving. I just so intrigued to see how it all plays out. Another intriguing game with the debut of Tua Tagovailoa, the starting debut, I should say. He played some garbage time in that last game against the aforementioned Jets. So Dolphins, I was texting with Ed Sammons a week ago or so when this was announced, the quarterback change. He said it's a half-point move, but it's 3 to 3.5. So that's significant, obviously. And I think it should be more. I'm surprised it's not 4, 4.5. I think Fitzpatrick's pretty good. So my question is Tua been that good in playoffs, or is this a plan all along, a la Kevin Cash? This is the plan all along? Or has Tua earned the right to give some optimism on the future and go from there? Because not that I'm running to bet the Rams here, but I think Fitzpatrick and what that team was doing, I also question what the locker room is going to be like after this, you know, this quarterback change, because, you know, Miami was basically in the playoff hunt at least.
Already taking a Dodgers victory lap and taking shots at Kevin Cash. I respect that. I'm happy for you, and I respect it. I don't know what they're doing, but I have to think that Tua is showing them something in practice. I cannot believe that if Tua was floundering every day in practice that they would have made this move, because it would have infuriated the whole locker room. I've got to think there's something Tua is showing them, that it's got to be more than just a plan thing. Like they said before the season started, we're going to go to Tua after the bye week, no matter what. That's hard for me to believe. So I'm thinking he has shown them something. They are confident in him, because I agree, Fitzpatrick is a solid quarterback. You don't make that move unless you think that the rookie can give you something. Public is mostly on the Rams in this game, a little less than 3-1. We'll need Miami. It doesn't look like it's shaping up to be a really big decision, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You don't know, because they took such a high pick with him, so maybe that was the plan when they kind of realized, like, hey, we're probably not going to win the Super Bowl. I mean, they know
it's possible too.
Their ceiling's a wild card. I mean, they're not going to win it, right?
You're right. I mean, they're not going to win a Super Bowl. They're not going to win a championship with this team. I mean, there's no question about that.
I'm intrigued because I love Tua in college. I bet him a million times, first half, all that stuff with Alabama. So I like the guy. I mean, how can you not? He's likable. So I hope he does well, but I also like Fitzpatrick. So I'm going to keep an eye on this. I really like what Flores has done with this team. Their cover machine is a dog. So I really like them. Next game, I think it feels pretty cheap on New Orleans at the Bears. Now, look, the Bears could not have played worse. But I thought it was fascinating. We've all seen the clip with what Brian Griese said during the broadcast in terms of play calls by Matt Nagy sent in the polls. And the Saints, I'm not going to say it's smoke and mirrors, but it was impressive last week what they did without their two top wide receivers and what they're doing despite, you know, a limited arm with Breeze.
Yeah, for them to lose both Thomas and Sanders, that's why you saw the number come down. Carolina at New Orleans, that number got down through 7, went to 6.5 briefly. And Carolina covered the game. Carolina was a pretty sharp side with those two wide receivers out. But New Orleans did get the win. That's all they care about. The movement in this game has been interesting as well. We've seen this total dip from 47 all the way down to 43.5. New Orleans at Chicago, possible weather, I would imagine – Chicago won't exactly be pleasant on November 1st. But we saw the total fly down in the Denver-Kansas City game last week, and that went way over. So be careful betting these weather totals unless you find out that it's going to be very windy.
Yeah, we did it on the show on Sunday. We said, don't be fooled by snow. The footing hurts the defender more than the offensive player, because guess what? The offensive player knows the play call.
The defender has to react to the guy in the snow. There's no question about it. It's the wind that knocks the scores down. A linebacker having to tackle a guy when he doesn't know which way he's going to go in the snow actually hurts him.
Right, right. I lost a lot of money on this matchup a year ago with Teddy Bridgewater against the Bears, and I had the Bears, and it was not a good bet. San Francisco at Seattle. So this will be the true litmus test on the Niners, right? Like, this will know whether they're like back in the playoff mix. I think it feels like a cheap number on Seattle, but I'm also, because I've just not sold San Fran's back, because I think we had Orlovsky explain it on the show about a month ago when Bosa went down. Their whole defense is predicated on pressure on the quarterback. In fact, a lot of defenses are, frankly, because when you can get it, that means you can play tighter coverage, all that stuff. So if you're not getting to the quarterback, because really it wasn't like they were getting to Cam Newton. He was just throwing, and I saw this on Twitter today. It was funny. It looked like he was throwing kettlebells. I mean, it's just like these things would like blow to the ground and skip and bump. You know, it's just, it didn't look like a normal quarterback back there. So I'm curious to see how the San Francisco defense looks against Russell Wilson.
You might be right. It might be cheap, because our look-ahead number on this game was more like 6.5, 6. Now this game is all the way down to San Francisco +3, -120, because we had a player that we respect yesterday took 49ers +3 even money, and we moved the juice off the 3 there. So most of the public money is on Seattle, but it's nothing noteworthy. It's like less than 2 to 1. That's not noteworthy for a favorite. Mm-hmm. The public is almost always on a favorite in every game. There has been some sharp money on the 49ers, but to me, it seems like the value is kind of gone on San Francisco at this point. I mean, you're talking about taking them at +3, -120 when they were 6, 6.5 a week ago. I know the 49ers have been impressive, but I don't know that there's a lot of value left on that side.
I have a question about the look-ahead line, and this is something I've been kind of, you think about when you're driving and stuff, and I kind of want to do a topic on this on the show, and I'm going to do it right now here on the pod.
Sure.
Because I hear I use it as a reference. I see some of the guys on the show use it as a reference, and it's certainly like a good talking point, but I'm not quite sure it's apples to apples, because what are your limits on the look ahead line?
We'll give people 2,000 on it at the counter. And we've got guys that come in, and they're respected guys, and it's all they bet is they come in here and they bet 2,000 on that 12-day number. And that's really all the business they give us on anything. And when the number moves their way, I'm sorry, when the number moves against them the next week, if you just bet what they bet the previous week and then get a better number than them, is what essentially I'm trying to say.
Right.
I found over the years you would do quite well doing that.
Okay. So they're usually right.
Yes. And I can also tell you when those guys lose, the book usually loses too. And when those guys win, the book usually wins.
So you position. My point is this. Comparing a number like today, and then especially like Sunday morning, to what it was 10 days earlier at one book that had a 2K max bet, like Sunday That's morning, fair. Like the line is just hardened into place and all the data points, it's just like a very true number. Whereas it's more, there's more fluidity and elasticity in that previous number. So I feel like it's smart to incorporate that in analysis, but I think it's done a little too often, and it's not quite apples to apples. There has to be a filter on that.
I think it's fair. I don't disagree, but the idea is, unless there's an injury, when you're like a quarterback injury, when you see that huge number move, line move, that's what we always talk about, not overreacting too much. And what we're saying is, look, we think the market is overreacting too much, so there might be value on this side over here. You throw it out the window if Dak Prescott gets hurt, then just forget
about
it, because it's a completely different game now.
Actually, Preston would reference that, because, you know, we saw the new number and it was like, is Andy Dalton, the drop off to Dalton, really worth that much, you know? So it actually was.
Well, we Turns out it was worth a lot more than we thought. if I'm being honest, because when we were doing that night, I was one of the people in the room saying I didn't think it was going to be the colossal drop off that it certainly has proven to be. Sometimes you get those
again,
wrong, man.
Ezekiel Elliott.
It doesn't help when Ezekiel Elliott fumbles the ball every time he touches.
Not all on
that. No, it's not. I agree. Fine, I'll defend myself.
Dysfunction, and that team has dysfunction. Anyway, I just wanted to bounce.
Well, their coach is Mike McCarthy, Doug. So if you have Mike McCarthy as your coach, you've got some issues.
Yeah, Mr. Analytics. I just thought it was really interesting, and I was thinking about it. I was like, you know, we use this a lot, but I also think, especially early in the season, right? So maybe not now, but like 2 weeks prior, there's a lot more fluidity in the market anyway, because it's just we're getting more games and more we're learning more about the teams. And I always said, like. Yeah. To cross over to rankings, people complain about college football rankings being in the preseason in week one and two. I was like, no, I'm all for rankings. You just got to be more likely to move teams 10, 15 spot than you are maybe in like November. Like if a team's 15th in the nation and they get blown out, like they shouldn't drop to 21. They should unranked. Like just have more fluidity on in the rankings early in the season because the games are influenced more. So in this case, like the look headline should have drastic moves after weeks 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, we know the teams a lot better by the end of the year, obviously. And we need to be quicker to adjust early in the year. I agree with that.
So we'll see how the San Francisco game plays out. For me, it's Seattle or pass. Now this next one, all of a sudden this line shot up. It's now 9.5 with the Eagles. With
yeah,
a total
we
of 43?
We put it up yesterday, and we discussed it briefly. I think that on Sunday night, we all thought for sure that Dallas was going to make a move to get a quarterback. Maybe they go for a Ryan Fitzpatrick or for my favorite quarterback, Jameis Winston. We've been a little surprised they haven't really done anything, and we opened at 7.5, and last night we had a better we didn't know come in and bet the Eagles. A new player, which always kind of gets your radar up when somebody comes in and bets into, like, I'd consider this a soft market because there's so many question marks at the quarterback position for Dallas. So I'd consider that a soft market. And then the player is somebody we don't know, which, like I said, that'll make you put your guard up pretty quickly. So we moved it pretty aggressively. We went from 7.5 to 9.5, and that's where we are right now. And that was our thought process on why we moved it so aggressively. This isn't as tight of a number as it would be when there's a game where we know the quarterbacks, we know the teams very well. A lot of variables in this Dallas-Philadelphia game.
So this would be like the equivalent of a circled game, basically. So you have like a lot more willing to move off the number. And I will say, just remind our listeners, a move from 7.5 to 9.5 is actually less of a move than it is from 7 to 7.5. Is that right? I think I remember that correctly.
Yeah, that sounds right. I would agree with that.
I think the modelers have said that. So if not, it's like right there in the neighborhood. So I can't trust Philly because Carson Wentz is determined to play close games. And for 9.5 with a total of 43, this is getting up there. But do you think you moved it maybe just to get out of teaser range unless you do 7 points?
Well, that's part of it, but it was, and I know a lot of books do that, but for us, it was really more just because we don't trust the market as much on this game as we would for pretty much every other NFL game on the board.
Okay, cool. So that's a Sunday night game. I am intrigued by it. I'm curious to see if Dallas has any locker room cohesion. I mean, given what happened with Andy Dalton getting decapitated, and given what happened with just how they have just folded and just everything and McCarthy and the press conferences and all the reports that have come out, that players don't trust the coaches. I'm curious to see if they just roll over or if these guys, who I think they are professionals, and you don't get to the NFL by being people that quit. So, like, I'm expecting a decent performance. Now, they just may not have the talent on defense, but 43, we'll see. So DiNucci's the guy? I mean, is that what we're going with?
Well, that's the question, because I think part of the discussion we've had here is if Dallas isn't going to acquire a quarterback, does that mean they think Dalton can play this week? I mean, I was watching the Washington-Dallas game on Sunday, and I would have thought Dalton would be out for a month after that hit. But how could Dallas not make a move for a quarterback unless they thought Dalton was at least going to be available to them off the bench? I don't know why, but then at the same time, why am I putting myself down the rabbit hole trying to figure out what the Dallas Cowboys are doing? Because there's no explaining a lot of what they do. I don't know. But that all ties into what I said earlier about this is just not a market, not a number we trust as much as a normal one, because there's just too much going on in this game.
Carson Wentz is 7-15 ATS as a favorite over the past three seasons. But then again, Dallas is the only team winless against the spread this year. And they are one away from tying the mark to start a season. The 0-3 Raiders went 0-8 ATS to start a year. Cowboys are 0-7.
Wow.
The
0-3 Raiders, were they off of the Super Bowl loss in 0-3?
Yeah, you know, I got to look at that. They were
I think 0-2 was the year they lost the Super Bowl to Tampa Bay. And so 0-3, they would have been off the Super Bowl loss. Talk about overvalued, huh?
I mean, that was a downward spiral ever since that guy ran off to Mexico. Okay.
Barrett Robbins.
Yeah. God.
Yeah. Things really got away after that.
I was in New York for like a meeting with an agent. Then I had one Monday morning. Yeah. So I was like dead sober at a Super Bowl party, just sitting on the couch, just watching a slow death of my favorite team. Literally dead sober. And like people were playing Beirut, like, all friends from college going nuts, partying, and like I'm just sitting there, like I have a big meeting at like 8 a.m. the next morning.
I had a Raiders future bet from early in the year that year that I watched, because like the Redskins were such garbage, I didn't even bother. Yeah, I watched their dumb games, but you can't really get invested when the team is that inept. But I had a future bet on the Raiders, so I kind of tracked them that whole year. They get to the AFC, they get to the Super Bowl, and they just get worked by the Bucs. Brutal.
Raiders 4-12 that season. It was the year after the Super Bowl. They started the year 2-6. And then the following week, they lose in overtime by 3 to the Jets. So it looks like they covered that game, I would assume. So they lost by 3. So they lost that 9th game, but did cover at home. That was a fun year. So the Cowboys, you just can't bet. I mean, they're the only winless team ATS, and they're not good, and who knows what's going on with their locker room. Okay, next game on the card. This was my play. I have to do a head-to-head with Stu Gotts every week on Tuesday, and we pick games, and we each pick. So my pick was the Chargers, -3 at Denver. Now, look, you don't want to overreact to Denver last week, but I think they've just been bad. Obviously, hit hard with injuries, and they're just not good. Even Drew Locke's not good.
We've got the game off the board right now due to some COVID concerns that we read about. We did have the number at 3. It looks like there are books in town that have it up at 3 right now, Chargers 3. This number's pushed up a little bit from what we opened it at. We opened it more in the pick'em range. The public's all over the Chargers here. I got to say, Justin Herbert is very impressive. He's a guy I didn't really like coming into the season. Didn't like him in college, and you know, he's really played very well. So I can't blame you there. Denver season's really never gotten on track, so to speak. Too many injuries for the Denver Broncos, I think.
Yeah, and I'm not sold on Fangio. I mean, that's the thing. And I'm not either. You mentioned Joe Burrow earlier, talking about how you thought he'd be good, but not this good. Herbert's the guy I didn't think would be this good. I mean, he looks polished. And we've always said with the Chargers, if they just could get a quarterback who didn't shoot themselves in the foot like Rivers the last few years, because he has talent. They've had talent there. Now, maybe not Super Bowl talent. Like everyone else is buying into this team as a sleeper the last handful of years. I never did. But they have the pieces here on offense and defense. Now, they've had some injuries like Derwin James, obviously, early on, lost for the season. But this is a pretty good team. And Herbert's putting up ridiculous numbers. Like the team, and I'm a very, play amateur psychologist on a lot of handicapping, as you very well know. So they're like celebrating with him. They like him. And I was watching Inside the NFL last night or whatever it's called these days. And they have all the mic'd up players. And I think it was Hunter Henry or somebody trying to remember who it was. But they were like, they love Herbert. And it's like, all right, now he's playing well and he's throwing good pass. But and he's, you know, he runs too. He's a dual threat to a certain extent. So I think this is a team kind of on the come.
I think he's a quarterback on the come. I don't know if they're going to be a team on the come. I'm not a big fan of Anthony Lynn. Some end of game mismanagement. Although they should have beat New Orleans in that Monday night game. The kicker missed the field goal. You can't blame that on the coach or the quarterback.
Right. Right. I don't know. I know what you mean, though, the overtime decision. But, yeah, all right. This will be fun. See which coach shoots themselves in the foot here with a decision late. The other game, the second to last game on the card, is obviously the big game, Pittsburgh at Baltimore. I'm sorry. I really like the Ravens. I know Pittsburgh's undefeated. I know all the stats that say when a team's undefeated this late in the season, they almost always cover. I get it. I just think the Ravens are loaded, and they've pulled their foot off the pedal late in these games. They've had 35 at the end of three, and they like just grind out the fourth quarter. I mean, this team, this offense is still explosive.
Well, you're going to like what I have to say, because right now, if we only look in the straight bets column, it's like a 20-1 ticket count on the Pittsburgh Steelers. If we start adding in the parlays, it condenses a little bit, but it's still almost a 6-1 ticket count on the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's not reverse line movement because the number has come down. As you know, this number was more like 6. It got as low as 3.5. Right now, we're at Baltimore 4. But the public is absolutely backing the Steelers as a dog on Sunday morning here.
Yeah, so it was open Sunday night 6, went right away to 5.5, and then I think like 2 days ago, it shot down to 3.5, and now it's back up to 4. So a lot of the tickets you have are on +4 and +3.5, right?
Yeah, they are. I mean, some of the sharper guys were the ones taking 6, but yeah, I'd say the majority of the tickets are probably at 4. Or they are at 4 and 5.5 for a few tickets, 3.5, but only a couple guys actually got us at the 6. More than a couple, but not all the tickets were at 6.
I mean, if I lose, I'd lose, but I'm going down with Baltimore here. But someone raised a point. They're like, who's Baltimore beaten? I mean, they lost to the Chiefs, right, on that Monday night game, the high-profile game. And then they just beat up on bad teams, like Cleveland in week 1, and then at Houston, at Washington, at Philly, Cincinnati. So they're not exactly battle-tested. But I love Baltimore. It is fair, totally. But they've also dominated those games. They were up like convincing. They were up like 20 in almost all those matchups. So I'm curious to see how this game. It should be a good game. Probably still the best NFL rivalry. We'll see. Maybe Seattle, San Francisco. I don't know. But I'm fired up for this one because Pittsburgh's solid, and with Big Ben back, I really like them. And they have all the weapons. I mean, they have great receivers. Right? Or maybe not great, but good receivers. No Devin Bush, so we'll see how that affects Pittsburgh trying to stop that Baltimore run. But I'm on the Ravens here. I do.
How do you have both of those rivalries on the same Sunday? Neither one of them are the Sunday night game.
Good point.
Explain well that.
We get DiNucci versus Wentz.
I mean, I think most people who don't have a bias would probably agree with you that those are currently the two best rivalries in the NFL, and they're both playing, and neither one of them are in prime time. That's a failure from the NFL. We'll see what happens here. I know we're about to go to the Monday night game. If this game doesn't get played, maybe they try to slide one of those two games to Monday night. I don't know.
Well, right now we're keeping an eye on whether we'll get the Monday night game too, because Tampa's at the Giants. We've got some COVID concerns on both teams. I believe Schefter tweeted earlier today about a staffer on the Bucs that may have tested positive. I'm saying may. I apologize. I didn't line it up in my notes here. But we have the Tampa Bay Bucs laying double digits, like 10.5 now at the Giants. There's some 11.5s out there in the market. And look, this Tampa team looks like it's on a crash course to be a 1 or 2 seed. Brady looks great. I like, you can get 12-1 and 15-1 out there on Brady to be MVP. And we can get into that. But the Giants, and where do you think this closes?
Well, we have this game off the board right now. Obviously, we got to keep an eye on I read today that the Giants were down to 4 offensive linemen. The other ones were sent home to quarantine. If all the favorites cover on Sunday and the parlay liability is rolling into Monday night, yes, you might see this number move up from 10.5, which is what we had it at when we closed the betting. It wouldn't surprise me at all if we saw this number go higher, if the books all see all kinds of parlay liability going to Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. Right now, Brady 10-1 to win the MVP at the Superbook.
Right. And here's my rationale. And I said this 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we ran the clip on air, that I said at 25-1, I go, we were discussing all the MVPs, and it was like, plus 190 on Wilson, plus 250 on a couple others, 4-1 for Jackson and Mahomes. I said, look, the only one you should bet right now is Brady at 25-1. The other one's like, there's just too much uncertainty and not enough payout. And look, they've made a move. I mean, they're making a move, not just with Antonio Brown, but their defense is getting better. I mean, Brady looks great. And I think contributing to the narrative, if you will, is the Patriots' struggles. And I realize, I realize I'm more nuanced and you can't put it all on not having Brady. But in the most simplest form, Patriots struggling after losing Brady is helping Brady's MVP cause in Tampa Bay. And they're going to be a one or two
seed. I agree with that.
The QB of the one or two seed is going to be in the running for MVP. And there's a little bit of voter fatigue with both Lamar Jackson and Mahomes. I think Brady at 12-1, if you can get him, or 15-1 is still worth the play.
Well, I definitely agree with you about the Patriots struggles build a narrative for Brady. There's no question about that. Brady, we have 10-1, which is probably a little lower than market because we do lose a lot on Brady. He's one of our worst outcomes. Really, it looks like the worst outcome other than Jimmy Garoppolo, who I'm not too concerned about. So, you know, it's a very bad outcome for us. And Brady, really, of the people that actually can win the MVP, is definitely our worst outcome right now.
Well, and he's also looks good, man. The offense, he looked great.
Yeah, they look impressive. They look impressive. And Brady's a very smart guy. He got out of New England. He moved down to Florida to a better roster for a lot more money and no state income tax. I mean, nobody ever said this guy was dumb.
There's a component of he's sort of the GM bringing in Brown. If it works, like brings in Gronk, like that's part of the narrative too. His campaign, if you will. So look, and we'll see. I mean, look, there's a lot of football left. The favorite this juncture in the season rarely goes on to win the MVP, Heisman especially. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I definitely did want to mention, because I hope people can go grab maybe 12-1 or 15-1. I think it's still worth a play because I think they're going to be a one seed. I think New Orleans is a little bit on the decline. And in terms of the standings, like obviously the Packers will be in the mix. And the NFC West is just going to kind of cannibalize each other, right? And so they're going to be good teams. They're like, they may have the whole division in the playoffs for all we know. But I don't think that the division champ necessarily will have a better record than the two seed, which could be the Bucks in this case. So that's my 2 cents on that one.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, another nice week for the Baby Bankroll Bonanza. You win with the Rams and the expert analysis of, the tech account suggests you should bet the Rams. And, it's funny. I didn't like my
teaser. Anything that pays the bills, Doug.
I didn't like my teaser by the end of the week, so I didn't do it on the show, but it got there on the Baby Bankroll. So I just got a little nervous about the Saints when the injuries of Sanders and Thomas were there. Anyways, so we each won a nickel. So I'm at 1,200. You're at minus 1,300. I've only had one losing week, I believe, but it was a big week. I think I lost like $7,000 or something. So
I thought we had an intern to do all this. Hold on a second. Don't we have an intern to do all this stuff? You don't have time for this. We're Darren.
No, we have a Twitter guy who has his own Darren.
He's like Darren. A high tea with a Mr. Kazarian. Well, I think we should have the... You and I should go out and have some high tea and let this guy at Monk's and let the intern do all that work for us. We don't have time for that.
He was really kind on Twitter.
He was very nice.
So I think it's Bonanza Burner is the handle. All right, he's up to 12 followers, so good for him. No, I meant that like it's like, all right, this is we're taking off here. We're gonna get him.
He's moving the needle.
So I don't like this card at all. Am I going first? Or I like letting you go first.
You know, I don't like anything at all, and I was panicking and I was looking for a ticket count, and then I out of the blue, I get a text from a guy, I mean, just like in the last 20 minutes, a guy that you remember as the Prince of Props. He's my buddy from back home that I always go out with him the night before Thanksgiving. And we usually have too much to drink, and he gives me a prop play for the Thanksgiving games, and we release that on the show. He just texted me out of the blue. He says, I got two prop plays for tonight's game. Do you want to get them out on the show? And hell yeah, I do, because I don't like anything else. So can I Can I give out his two plays? I mean, I give out two plays from the Prince of Props. They're both Teddy Bridgewater prop bets for Thursday Night Football.
You are in charge of your own bankroll. So if you would like to do it.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. I'm going to go with
If you don't want to use them, I'll let you still give them out. But you can use them as your
best. No, I'll use them.
Okay.
I got a lot of confidence in this kid. I'm going to go Bridgewater under 284.5 yards for 1,100 to win 1,000. And do you want me to do the other one?
Sure.
Under 2 touchdown passes, under 2, minus 130, 650 to win 500. And that'll be it for me. If I see anything, I will text you or tweet at you or tweet at Darren. But for now, I'm going to hold fast. I've been on a winning streak, and now I'm going to hand the baton over to the Prince of Props. I'm going to let him bring us through week 8.
Yeah, you have been on a heater. I'm going through this. So definitely 3 straight weeks with the winning. So the second prop was 630 or 650 to win 500?
It should be 650 to win 500. It's under 2, minus 130 here at the Superbook.
So no hook, 2 touchdown passes. Minus 30. Okay. All right. It's good. I am on, I really like the Ravens, and I'll grab the 4. I don't think it's going to get much better. I'll do a dime on Baltimore minus 4, and I'll wait on the Chargers. No, it's probably going to go up. I'll do a nickel on the Chargers minus 3. So no teasers for me, no initial positions. I'm going to, just try to hold Murray with an arm's distance, although you can make a move here.
Yeah, you're getting a little, in your old age, man, you're getting real cautious, dude. And I don't know this guy that's doing this, but it's okay. It's a long season. We go all the way through the Super Bowl, right?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. I see a couple minus 110s out there on the Chargers, so I'll do minus 110.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
The LAC minus 3, minus 110 for nickel.
I wrote down
SD. Okay, my man. Good stuff as always. Really appreciate your time, your humor, your fitting us into your busy schedule with all your people. Good stuff as always.
Congratulations on the Dodgers. What a year for Los Angeles, Lakers, and the Dodgers. Congratulations to you guys, man. That's awesome.
It feels good. Now, a question for you. Last year, with your Nationals. This. Was it a little anticlimactic once the final out arrived because it was such a one-sided game?
The game 7 of the World Series?
Well, because it was a blowout.
We were losing that game. The Nationals were losing, and they came back. Howie Kendrick hit that 2-run homer off the foul pole.
Oh, yeah. Maybe not.
There was nothing anticlimactic about it. In fact, I actually ran out my living room and jumped into my pool fully clothed. And there was nothing anticlimactic about the win. No, answered no. Easy question.
Interesting. Because it was a little anticlimactic. Well, because they were up 6-2 in the ninth. Yeah. So like that's what I was talking about. The last.
See what you're saying.
Like, 5-10 minutes.
I mean, I guess, but no, not really. I didn't feel that way. It sounds like you didn't have enough to drink while you were watching the game.
Despite wearing black tie at the Circa opening, I was dressed up for the occasion, but I was dead sober. Yeah. I don't know, because I was really emotional in game 7 of the NLCS, and then Sunday night with Kershaw, and like, just, it was intense, and the getting out of that jam in the fourth inning, first and third, no out, the stealing of home. Like, I was pins and needles hanging on every pitch or whatever. And that was also sweating out the Seattle, minus 3.5 situation. I just, this one just felt, maybe I just thought the Dodgers were never like going to lose after they went up 3-2. Maybe that's what it was. And obviously the Mookie Betts homer helped. And I knew we had Bueller in our back pocket for game 7. I don't know. And I think the bubble and the Lakers are already, taking some glory away. I just think all of it was kind of just a weird, but I was talking to a buddy who's only a Dodgers fan. Brad Edwards was on the pod Wednesday, and he said it was kind of weird. He's not like a Laker fan. So I think it's probably just the bubble component of it all. And maybe we're just getting old too.
Part of it. Yeah, for sure. But I don't see, to me, the Lakers championship is like a fully legitimate one where, you know, they played a 72 game out of 82 regular season. They had the same playoff format. I always thought the baseball one this year was a little wonky with the 60 game season and the adjusted playoff format. But I don't see how you take anything away from the Lakers. If anything, it hurt the Lakers because they were the one seed and they should have had home court advantage, which they didn't get because of the bubble. So I don't see how there's any asterisk on that Lakers title whatsoever.
No, I would never put an asterisk on any of them. Actually, the Dodgers had to win an extra series, frankly. And we know anything.
That's a good point. And they didn't get home field either, which they would have had because they had the best record in the National League. That's a good point. You're right.
Now, they did get the advantage of batting second ups. And obviously that helps in the strategy of late games. But in a 3-game set, anything stupid can happen. Although it just didn't happen. The one seeds prevailed to reach the World Series. I just, for the fan in me, and I don't know, maybe just the energy, I don't know. But look, it was awesome. I watched every pitch of the World Series. It was great. I mean, it's something that the Dodgers have been so close for 32 years we've been waiting. And it's not even the last few years of, it's all those, like, just getting their butt kicked by the Cardinals and even the Braves when I was in college, like, you know, like Javi Lopez Braves just destroying them in the first round. So all those things. Anyways, man, we go back to back. So, Christine, as we bring you on, who's your favorite baseball team? You're next up, apparently, next year.
My favorite team is the Red Sox.
Okay, well, let's not
root for them. Sorry, Christine. We can't go that far. No.
I was going to say, you're next in line here. We go back to back. But
I know. I'm spoiled. I've had too many victories.
New England's had enough fun, Christine. Who's going to root for New England? You guys have had plenty of fun.
Gosh. All right. See, I was hoping it'd be like, you know, some like team on the cusp that's been so close, like maybe the Rays or a team, you know, maybe the Braves. All right. Let's just hope it's the Dodgers again. That's what we'll do. We'll try to make a run here. I'll tell you what, we did a fun segment. Maybe you guys could do a prop bet. Maybe like a yes, no, or a 3-way bet or something. I'm just trying to think who wins it. Who would you rather bet on next year to defend their title, Dodgers or Lakers?
For me, it would be the Dodgers, just because I think there's going to be so many good teams in the NBA's Western Conference. But also, the MLB playoff format can be a little more random than the NBA. You know, usually the best team wins it all in the NBA, and I don't think that's true in baseball. So it is a good question. It's a fun discussion.
Right, and we haven't had a repeat winner in baseball since the 98 to 2000 Yanks. But I'm with you. I would do the Dodgers because they've won, I think, 8 straight division titles. And so you can kind of pencil them into the playoffs. They're going to get David Price back, who opted out this year. The core of the team is all, like, in its prime, except for maybe Kershaw might take a step back. But the rest of, like, that offense is not, like, getting worse. A lot of those guys are younger, going to get better. Like, Will Smith is going to get better. But Bellinger's not getting worse. Betts isn't getting worse. Muncy's not getting really worse. I mean, they're loaded, right? Seager's not getting worse. So, and then the Lakers, you know, the NBA has all these like repeat chance, but the Lakers weren't like head and shoulders the best team. So I think to your point, so it's funny, like historically, you'd rather bet the NBA team because they both have similar odds. But I think it's the Dodgers because you can play out of it. I think the Dodgers actually like, what is it, like plus 450? I think that's actually like a pretty good price when you factor in they're going to be like a 1 or a 2 seed in that because of that division, everything like you can probably play out of that.
You've got to think too. We've got the Dodgers at 5-1 here at the Superbook, just for the record. You've got to think too with the Lakers. You've got Golden State potentially coming back, getting their core guys back. They've got the number 2 overall pick. Maybe they package that to get a veteran player. They bring that into the mix. There's no reason to think the Clippers won't be great next year. Denver was very young this year. They got to a Western Conference Finals. There's going to be a lot of competition in the NBA Western Conference, and LeBron James is technically human, and he turns 36 in December, I guess. Yeah, that's what they tell me. He turns 36 in December of this year, so at some point, the man has to slow down, I think. Haven't seen any of that yet, though.
No. All right, well, it was a fun segment, and maybe leaves our viewers with a little thing to ponder. Because it is interesting, but I think that speaks to the NBA's parity, at least in the upper tier. Obviously it's not parity across the board, but the top tier of contenders is all right there. We'll see if Miami could even make a move for Giannis. We'll see. I mean, obviously a lot has to happen between now and then, but the Celtics will be back. There'll be some interesting stuff, you know, things like that. But anyways, my man, good stuff as always. You know, let's connect soon. We got to go golfing one of these days as well.
I'm down, man. You didn't want to be out there on Monday at Bears Best, man. It was like playing in the British Open. It was so windy out there. It was ridiculous. But when the weather clears up, we'll get out there, and I'll talk to you next week about the NFL.
Yeah, and bubble life is over, so now we just have the regular sports schedule. So we'll find some opportunities here. But all right, but man, good stuff.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
Kicking is for losers.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Behind the Bets podcast. Thanks to Mr. Murray. Thanks to Matthew and Lou and Brad Edwards yesterday's pod. A lot of fun stuff. Hope you guys all enjoyed it. So no baseball, no NBA moving forward. We're going to just continue this football and UFC content. Obviously, we'll have some golf in a couple weeks for the Masters. And we'll keep it rolling here. So thanks to everyone for rating, reviewing, subscribing, downloading all the details that make our numbers go up and obviously helps pay the bills here and the sponsorships as well. So let's stay hot.